everyone, Steve Adubato. More importantly, that is Mary Gamba, the executive producer and co-anchor of Lessons in Leadership. Mary, we kick off today's program with our mini-series, Leaders in Law, with two terrific leaders at the law firm that we are partners with, O'Toole Scrivo. James, you go by Jim?
Yes, yep, Steve.
Jim DiGiulio, I can do Italian-American names, partner and general counsel, O'Toole Scrivo, LLC, Leslie Ellis Lombardi, partner, O'Toole Scrivo, LLC. Jim and Leslie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us, Steve.
Now, hold on, Jim. What did Kevin O'Toole and Tom Scrivo tell you you needed to do to prepare for Lessons in Leadership?
Just speak highly of them. That's all.
That's what they say to everybody.
Yep. Especially Kevin.
I'm leaving that alone. Kevin's a longtime friend, partner, sponsor. Hey, listen, again, part of our Leaders in Law series. Jim, why law for you?
Steve, you know, it was, I came from a family of people that never went to law school. I'm the first lawyer in the family. But it's a profession that I learned to love quickly. And I love being in the courtroom. The courtroom is where I spend every day and I love it. And now kind of taking on a role of leadership in the firm has really given me a new opportunity to learn about how to administer law, how to lead young lawyers and help build people's careers. And I really enjoyed that. That's been the kind of gift that Kevin and Tom have given me over the last few years.
And for you, Leslie, because Jim, you have a slightly different role as general counsel as well. We'll talk about that in a second. Leslie, why law for you?
Yeah, so I started on politics. I was in politics for 4 years.
I did too, and then I lost an election. I had to get another job, but go ahead.
Correct. And so then Kevin took pity on me and said, how about getting a real job? And one that you don't lose every 6 months and lose your health care every 6 months, right? And maybe grow up a little bit. And so I said, okay, fine. And I went to work for Kevin 20 years ago. And here I sit now after building a career with him for 20 years. And it's been just a great ride.
You know, Mary, we do a lot of leadership coaching for people in law firms, accounting firms, banks, trade unions, all kinds of organizations. And I often wonder about this. In law school, because we have physicians as well, and I always ask physicians, what did you learn about leadership in medical school? And they look at me like, what kind of question is that? Jim, why are you laughing? Would you learn in law school, was there a course on leadership?
No, absolutely not. You don't learn any of the nuts and bolts of how to actually deal with people. You learn that on the ground.
And make mistakes on the ground and learn from that?
Oh, if you're not making mistakes, you're not learning. And, you know, I've worked with some difficult people, some real demanding leaders, Chris Christie, Kevin, Tom, and they demand the best of you. And that's where you learn. You know, you
Absolutely.
Fail and you move on.
Yeah. Leslie, for you, the leadership equation or your leadership comes from where?
Well, I started on politics. I watched some really amazing women in my career, working for the Republican Party for years. Really strong people who, you talk about having some demanding people you're answering to, right? Really on Capitol Hill, you've got some of the biggest personalities, biggest egos. And I learned how to really function under a lot of pressure. And like I said, once I met Kevin, I realized I'd found my home where I had an opportunity to take those lessons and implement them in the law. It's been a great way to kind of learn how to lead people and show them how to really be tough when things get really rough and you have to kind of rise to the occasion.
Mary, it's interesting. In listening to Leslie and Jim, they mention other people like Kevin O'Toole, Chris Christie, Tom Scrivo, others. And women, by the way, certain women, particularly for you, Leslie, in the Republican Party. How much, Mary, do you believe leadership or learning about leadership is who your role models are, who you work with, what you learn from them to do, and the other part, Mary, what not to do?
Yeah,
Mary.
It is so true, Steve and Jim and Leslie, as I'm listening to you, and we are talking about the leaders in law, but more importantly, the next generation of leaders. And more, I have two sons now that are 21 and 24, and you hear about this younger generation and that they need people to look up to. Jim, I'd love to get your perspective a little bit more on how you are mentoring those young leaders, either deciding to go into law school or not quite sure what direction to go once they make it to your firm. Talk a little bit about those leadership and communication characteristics that these young leaders in law really need to succeed today, just to succeed in the field of law.
Yeah, Mary, that's a really good point. And we see that a lot. I do a great deal of the hiring here at the firm. We've grown from 20 lawyers to 80 lawyers, and I've interviewed every single person that we've hired. And I think what I see, especially with the really young lawyers, is they want a leader that's decisive, but somebody that has compassion and can uplift them. They really want that juxtaposition. They want to have somebody that understands where they are in life. We have a lot of young parents at our firm. We're a high energy firm. And so those folks have a different timeline, right? They want to be home and go to a doctor's appointment and then log in late at night at 8 or 9 when their child's asleep. So just understanding where the people are and helping them grow their career, but also really live their lives the right way. I think that's a huge key for what I hear from all the young lawyers that we've hired is they really just want to have that understanding from their bosses and their leaders that, you know, you're there for them, but you also, you know, expect the best of them when they're actually practicing.
You know, Mary, the other part of that question, and I want to go to Leslie on this. So, Mary, we're talking about younger people. You and I have had this conversation for for a long time about feedback, creating a culture of coaching and feedback. A lot of our coaching is around coaching people in leadership positions to give tough, candid, specific, concrete. And I know Kevin and Tom are very good at this. They've had to do it for years. From your perspective, Leslie, do you believe there's anything about the younger generation, Gen Zs, if you will, next generation leaders in law, that makes it harder for them, more challenging for them, to receive, accept, and embrace tough, critical, but important feedback about their performance and needing to improve? I know it's a loaded question, but we do it in our coaching all the time. People are like, I don't like confrontation. I'm like, what, you got to tell them, you got to improve. Go ahead. I'm off my soapbox, Leslie.
No, that's actually a very, very good point, right? So I'm Gen X, right? So I'm kind of the last of the generations who played outside until the streetlight came on, right? And I grew up, you know, in my first jobs where you worked 7 days a week and you didn't question it, right? And you took feedback was getting yelled at in the lunchroom in front of an audience. And, you know, so
we,
now,
Mary, we do not advocate that, just to be clear.
We do not advocate that. Okay. But I think everyone on the Zoom call or in this meeting probably has faced that for sure.
Right. We've all been there.
No, so nothing I think, about that. But go ahead.
Nope.
Yeah. So I think what our challenge, my challenge has been as a leader personally and, you know, as a team with other leaders is teaching the new generation that it's okay. And there's going to be tough days. And if I'm not going to say it to you, the client's going to say it to your face. So we got to do this together and we work on it. And I have to say, I've really been lucky. Jim has hired some great people for us. Kevin and Tom have fostered a firm where you can be very direct with these people, but because there is a tremendous, the culture here is one of kindness. And as Jim echoed, your family is important. The person is important. It makes a big difference because yes, you get that tough feedback, but you also have a lot of support behind you to say like you're doing a great job. And you know what? On top of that, let me find what you're great at, right? Let me find what you're great at, and we'll work from there.
Mary and I talk about all the time, Jim, being kind, having a kind culture, old tool Scrivo, a kind, supportive, family oriented culture. I've known Kevin and Tom long enough to know family first, always. But that's not mutually exclusive with giving tough, critical, important feedback. Jim?
Yeah, I mean, especially in the practice of law. I mean, we have demands from clients that, you know, surmount everything that we do, right? We owe our client the most utmost obligation. So, you know, that was what drives us. And sometimes you have to put things aside and move forward and expect excellence from everyone. And that's what we do. So it's that balance. It's really hard. And like you said, Steve, especially with the younger generation, it is really difficult sometimes to give that criticism and not get something back that, you know, you don't expect. So it's really a tough balance. And everybody's figuring it out, I think, in every industry.
Mary, last question. By the way, we don't call it criticism. We call it feedback.
We call it feedback. Absolutely.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Mary.
Yeah. And Leslie, really in that same vein, one thing that Steve and I have found, especially it's very hard to find those young leaders who are go-getters. They aren't looking for that direction. They are just taking the initiative. They're being proactive. How do you, when you are training these young adults, to say to them, all right, no more handholding, those training wheels are off. Leslie, what advice do you have for other leaders that are out there who are struggling a little bit in that area to really get those young leaders to own their responsibilities, follow up and follow through?
Yeah, that is probably one of the most difficult parts of my job. And for me, what I have to do is be relentless and watching and following up and make my own follow up to make sure they're doing that and say to them, did you do this? Have you considered this? Have we thought about doing it this way? And then I have them out there as soon as I'm, as soon as we're both comfortable, I have them out there speaking to the clients. I have them on conference calls. I have them watch me and see the questions that I get from clients. So they have an appreciation for the client too, who's trying to run a business, right? At
That's
the end
right.
of the day, they have to make a report to the board of directors, et cetera. And so one of the best tricks I would say is to other leaders is to have them see what your life, what you are up against so that they can, understand how important it is to answer that 6 a.m. email on a Saturday, right? To be there at all times when you're called upon and to be not make mistakes. You just, really be really tough and solid and ready to show up and work.
Jim, final words on this. Your number one leadership lesson you've learned at O'Toole Scrivo is.
Make decisive decisions even when you don't have all the information and be accountable afterwards. If you don't do that, no one's going to follow you.
Yeah, that's important stuff. And to our partners at O'Toole Scrivo, who have been supporting, sponsoring this Leaders in Law series and talking about next generation of leaders in law and all kinds of professions, we want to thank Kevin and Tom for their support. And we wish you and the team at O'Toole Scrivo all the best. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Leslie. We
Steve,
appreciate
thank you,
it.
Mary. Thank you both.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you,
Leslie,
Mary.
this was painless.
I wouldn't say painless. Jim's better at it. Look at
What's
Jim's.
that?
Jim is like, Jim's Jim. Jim's like, Jim's
By the way, we're
perfect.
still on the air. You're just still talking, but that's okay. But see, she got relaxed. She was chill. It was great. Lessons leadership will be back. I've been doing this for 30 years. I can't get it out. I'll be right back. This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Vecino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Prager Metis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, NJ Transit, the Northport Center, O'Toole Scrivo, Gingoli Construction, New Jersey Sharing Network, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, inspiring great minds to greater purpose since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Next, please. Okay, we need a neutral expression. Sir, you're smiling.
Oh, am I?
Over 1 million lives in the U.S. have been saved by organ donation. So when you choose to become a donor, you're doing something good, which can make you feel really good.
Next.
Register today at njsn.org.
We're joined once again by our good friend Peter C. Connolly, Chief Executive Officer, CEO of New Jersey Manufacturing Extension Program, NJMEP is
Yes,
the
sir.
acronym. Good to see you, Pete.
Good to be seen. Glad to see you again, Steve.
You got the website is up right now. Tell everyone what the organization is, your mission, and how you support the manufacturing community.
Sure. So we're the New Jersey Manufacturing Extension Program. Our goal is to assist New Jersey small and medium manufacturers with organization excellence, development, and excellence. And we are one of 50 organizations. There's one of us in every state, and we work with the 10,000 small medium manufacturers in New Jersey.
So, Pete, we're about halfway through as we tape this program in 2026. What do you see as the one and two most significant challenges facing the manufacturing community in the state?
Well, depends on where you are. Across the board, it's corporate business tax all the way. Corporate business tax, so we're at sitting at about 11.5%. Pennsylvania in the next 2 years is driving down to be about 5%.
Wow.
South Jersey is transportation. As our good friend Senator Michael Testa would say, it's not New Jersey Transit, it's North Jersey Transit. But actually, I was just down with him yesterday in Atlantic City. New Jersey Transit has just set up six new bus lines that will go from Millville, Vineland, Camden, Glassboro, and Atlantic City. So that was just announced yesterday. So great things. But corporate business tax is probably the biggest issue.
By the way, check out our website, steveadubato.org. It's up right now. Previous interviews we've done with Senator Testa, this issue has come up, and Pete knows that. Pete, let me follow up on this. I was telling you I was watching another network, a business network this morning, before we came on, and a whole debate back and forth about the impact of the so-called Trump tariffs. He didn't do it alone, but there are tariffs. He's pushing them. The administration is pushing them. It's confusing to me what the impact of those tariffs is and has been on the New Jersey manufacturing community, you say?
So, yes. So, you know, there is misleading information. It is not a tax on the country. The country that we are importing from is not paying the tax. The importer of record pays the tax, pays the tariff. So if you're buying stuff at Walmart or Target, they're paying the tariff and passing that on to consumers. So that goes throughout the, you know, the United States, not just New Jersey. For New Jersey manufacturers, you do deal with export companies. So right now there is, you know, the Supreme Court has basically rejected tariffs and said that the administration does not have the power to do it, only Congress. So that was in February 20th.
Sure.
So what you're seeing with New Jersey manufacturers is that they're not going to get most of that money back that they've paid in tariffs to exporters. It's going to go to the export company, whoever they're importing from. So if you're sitting in Newark, you see all those import-export companies that are sitting there in Port Newark. Those companies are, the small manufacturers are starting to work with the import-export that they do get paid. Whether they do or not is yet to be seen.
You know, Pete, it's so interesting. As you lay this out, there's a lot of, I use this word, uncertainty. Meaning it's not clear where things are going. It's not clear who gets that money. And you and I have talked about this offline a lot.
Right.
And you made it clear it goes to the exporter, if you will, right?
Yes.
And also what's going to happen with the courts, what's going to happen with this election and who's going to be in Congress and what's that going to mean regarding tariffs and other policies and a new governor 6 months into her term, Governor Sherrill. Here's the question. How the heck do you plan as a leader in manufacturing with so much uncertainty?
You can't. It changes. You know, I get this question every day, and it's uncertainty. Companies, that's what they're looking for. The stock market is looking for certainty, and we can't find certainty. And, so actually, the government is now imposing more tariffs under Section 122 of the 1974 Tariff Act, where they can raise tariffs up to 15%. For 150 days before they have to go get approval.
And that falls, sorry for interrupting, Pete, that falls outside of the Supreme Court decision.
Correct.
Right.
So they have 150 days. Now, they're not doing every country. It's probably the big five, which is Canada, China, Japan, Germany, and I think Vietnam is the other one. And it's a wide range, but they have 150 days. They have begun to pay back. There's about $166 billion worth of tariffs they've collected. So far, they have approved $80 billion to be repaid, and they've paid only about $20 billion to date.
So a lot of stuff happening on the federal level. I mentioned the new governor or Governor Sherrill. Sure. What is the most impactful policy action that the Sherrill administration could and should take from your perspective? By the way, let me disclose, New Jersey MEP, an underwriter of those of us in public broadcasting, our company, I want to be clear. What is the most impactful, meaningful policy decision you believe the governor, together with the legislature, should make, that would have a positive impact on the manufacturing community in the state?
Permitting.
It's permitting.
The biggest thing. Permitting, the hugest thing. She's on a 21-county tour of going out, save time, save money, and how to reduce permitting throughout New Jersey.
Permitting for what, Pete? Sorry for interrupting. Permitting for what?
Permitting for expanding your business. Permitting for roadways. Permitting for parking lots. Extending your buildings. You name it. It's just a roadblock. There's horror stories out there. As I said, she's doing a 21-county tour. She's done Bergen County, Morris County, Somerset County, Mercer County, Hunterdon County.
To do what?
Meaning she's going out there and her team, Kelly Doucette, who's their chief operating officer,
right,
and getting feedback on what the key issues are. And everything we hear is permitting and the amount of time and cost it takes. I give two examples. One is the microbrewery business. You're allowed to serve hard pretzels, but you can't serve soft pretzels. One is a snack, one's a food. You tell me what the difference is.
And so how does that impact a manufacturer of software?
Well, a manufacturer, but that's just an issue with permitting. I will tell you, manufacturers, we have a customer that has a 70,000-foot facility. They just expanded 20,000, and the 20,000 is not in the tax-exempt zone. So now they lost their whole tax-exempt zone, even though it's contiguous to their property. So there's just, you know, regulatory issues and permitting issues out there that are just causing New Jersey companies problems.
It's not my job to editorialize, but it sounds like you just said that government needs to facilitate and help businesses succeed. We're not even talking about subsidizing. We're talking about just getting out of the way and helping the process while you regulate for safety and all those things. Right. But what you seem to be talking about is not about safety. It's about how government works or doesn't work.
The DEP process and Department of Transportation process is just, it's antiquated.
And state government.
And now, you know, she's made some moves, you know, putting Chris Calori in front of both the Turnpike Authority and New Jersey Transit. A smart move. Very smart move. So she's trying to, you know, she's 150 days in. You know, she's making a difference.
By the way, check out our full-length State of Affairs program that we did with Governor Sherrill. The website will be up again right now. Next time we have her in, which is in a few months, we will talk about the issue of how state government works or doesn't work, and how the agencies in state government facilitate and support business and what needs to be done to improve it. Peter Connolly is the Chief Executive Officer of New Jersey Manufacturing Extension Program, NJMEP. Peter, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. All the best.
Steve, pleasure to be with you.
You got it. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
Next, please. Okay, we need a neutral expression. Sir, you're smiling.
Oh, am I?
Over 1 million lives in the U.S. have been saved by organ donation. So when you choose to become a donor, you're doing something good, which can make you feel really good.
Next.
Register today at njsn.org.
Welcome back. This is Lessons in Leadership. Mary, it's time again for a Lessons in Leadership mini seminar. These are on our website, right? Tell folks what's there and why it's helpful.
All you need to do is log on to stand-deliver.com. The website just came up on the screen. And when you go there, just go to our mini seminars page. You can link there right from our homepage. And we've got a variety of seminars from everything from running more effective meetings, having confidence when speaking, you name it, it's there. So check it out.
And this one's about listening. The name of this seminar is Listen, dot, 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 really, in caps, listen. Bullet points, Mary, these are some best practices. First, I always say make a decision to listen. What does that mean to you?
It is so hard. Even as I'm sitting here with you right now, it's so funny. I'll give a shout out to my son, Joey, who's an actor. And he said, listen, he goes, Mom, for those of you who watch this show, I usually have glasses on. He's like, take off the glasses, be present, listen, and really be in the moment. Don't worry about everything going on in the background. Don't worry about what you look like. Really listen and be present with who you are having that conversation with.
Does this make it harder to be present, Mary?
It does. The majority of us have that as a distraction. Luckily, you know, you can turn it down, but you need to make that decision to be present and put that phone upside down.
So the first two bullet points, first, make a decision to listen. And there's no faking this. People go like, I look like I'm listening. No, decide that it's worth to listen. Don't interrupt me while we're talking about listening, Mary. Second bullet point, be present, put the phone down. How about this one? And you criticize this one sometimes, and I understand it, but I'm going to push back. I say, be curious and ask questions, which sometimes means, at least for me, while listening, strategic interjecting by asking a probing question to find out more, curious, being curious, is great listening. You say, never interrupt.
I don't say never interrupt. I say interrupt strategically. If we're on the air, you have 5 minutes to an end of a show, you need to interrupt because you don't want that person to take up all the oxygen and you do want to give them the best opportunity to share as many points with the audience. If you're having a cup of coffee or having a drink with somebody, let them finish. So that's where you and I disagree a little bit. Some people take a little bit longer to get to their point, and that's okay.
A little bit longer, Mary?
I selectively choose who I hang out with. So anybody that is long-winded, I just don't get together with them anymore.
Oh, by the way, that's not a bullet point. Ignore people that talk too long. How about this one? Mary, this is yours. It's not mine, but I want you to talk about it. You say, have attentive eye contact and body language. That's essential. Eye contact and body language.
It is so important. There is nothing worse than if you're having a conversation with somebody and they're looking beyond and you know they're checking out what's going on at the bar. Say if you're at dinner and you're having dinner with somebody, you even have called them cocktail party eyes, where they're looking around the room and deciding who they're going to talk to next instead of being straight eye contact focused. Once you start shifting your eyes away and you're looking in another direction, you lose that connection with the person. So it's so important to maintain eye contact at all times.
Yeah, but let me just push back on this. I know we have a minute left. I would not have met my wife, Jennifer, if I did not have what I refer to as cocktail party eyes. I was with someone. We were not married. We were dating. And I saw my wife at a restaurant, a bar across the, and I was looking at Jen. I didn't know who she was. And all I'm saying is
sometimes
cocktail party eyes and being distracted. It was rude what I did.
It was rude, but obviously whomever you were with, we will leave that name out of this conversation, but whoever you were with was not really the right person, obviously. So in that case, it was okay that you had cocktail party eyes.
Hopefully she's not watching right now. So last one, how about this one, Mary? Be open to other points of view, even if you disagree. Especially about politics. You and I had this conversation yesterday. Talk to someone about politics. Trump, Biden, Obama, this one, that one.
Mm-hmm.
They interrupt constantly because they have to tell you they're right.
Yeah.
How hard is it to be a good listener?
It is hard. It is so hard. And I know I just interrupted you again, but I know we're also up against the clock. So, but yes, so it is really important, especially with politics. If you can't remain open-minded, if you don't want to listen to another opinion, then don't even go down that lane. Don't have that conversation with a family member. Don't bring it up at a dinner table. Don't even try to challenge that friend, because the last time that I checked, you'll never hear somebody say, "You want to know what, Mary? You're absolutely right." So what you should do, though, is open your mind, hear the other person's perspective, and you may learn something.
Again, a decision to listen. Mm-hmm. It's key, because if you haven't made a decision that's worth listening to someone else's point of view, even if you disagree, and your obsession is rather, I'm going to tell you how right I am and how wrong you are. I don't care how good your body language is, what your eye contact is like. They know you're not listening. We know you're not listening. It's hard work. Listen, really listen for Mary and for Steve and for our entire great team at Lessons in Leadership. Thank you so much for listening and watching us. We'll see you next time. This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Vecino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Prager Metis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, NJ Transit, the North Ward Center, O'Toole Scrivo, Gingoli Construction, New Jersey Sharing Network, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, inspiring great minds to greater purpose since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
Next, please. Okay, we need a neutral expression. Sir, you're smiling.
Oh, am I?
Over 1 million lives in the U.S. have been saved by organ donation. So when you choose to become a donor, you're doing something good, which can make you feel really good.
Next.
Register today at njsn.org.